Hey there, Nomad of Nowhere fans. Welcome back to the Nomad of Nowhere After Show here on AfterBuzz TV as part of Rooster Teeth Reviews. Tonight we are talking about Season 1, Episode 6, El Rey. We're going to be breaking down the mid-season finale, talking about the backstory that we've been craving all season, talking about the relationship between Toth and Scout. And guys, we also have a very special guest joining us. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hell,
we need the Spanish version of this song.
Absolutely.
What is
Spanish version?
Well, no, we can make one. What is to hail or like to cower, to bow?
Just thinking that because I was actually thinking Hail to the King because I've had Evil Dead on my brain for weeks now. And I was like, how do you say that in Spanish? I am the worst person to ask, apparently. It's been a long time since Spanish 3.
Oh, boy. Well, anyway.
Anyway, my family would be ashamed. Anyway, hey there, Rooster Teeth fans. Welcome back to our Nomad of Nowhere after show. We are talking about El Rey tonight. Let's not waste any time. Let me introduce my fantastic panel. To my left, Mark Donica.
I'm Mark Donica.
That he is. And to his left, Stacey Shuttleworth.
Hey, I am also Stacey Shuttleworth.
To her left, Katie Cullen.
Hi, all my buddies. I'm rocking out right now.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm digging this. And I'm Megan Salinas. Guys, we are going to be keeping an eye on, actually not our normal hashtag, we're going to be keeping an eye on the hashtag RTR Nomad tonight, because we know you guys might have some questions for our very special guest. We announced it last week. Writer and brand archivist Eddie Rivas is going to be joining us halfway through the show, although we are using this first half to talk about the episode itself.
He requested it. Eddie requested that he listen to us freak out a little bit before we get him on the line. So this first little bit of the show is going to be us freaking out about the episode.
Okay, guys. So yeah, initial thoughts.
Ah! Ah!
That exactly.
What happened, man? Just like a Gretzico screaming into the distance. What is this lore that we're getting?
That would be appropriate to start with, dude.
Screaming. Gretzico death metal. We kind of sort of started with that. Guys, remember when this was a show about a cute little character going on quirky little adventures with his little googly-eyed friends?
Remember before we showed blood on screen? Remember those days?
Somehow it seems like so long ago.
We just kind of cranked it up to 11 here.
Like, I think that last week's episode cranked it up to 11. You know, it hit like the gas and we were going as fast as we could. I feel like this one is like getting hit by another car, like as you're going full speed ahead. That's not the best metaphor, but like I'm having
it's
a hard
awful.
Time.
No,
it's not. Chroma came up with a pretty good one.
Yes, let's hear it.
The animation went and straight up Madoka'd us. Yeah, magic is cute and only has a few deadly implications. Oh god, there's so much blood.
I feel that.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
At least
it.
We didn't lose our heads.
So, to try to put it in a more articulate way, I feel like this episode, you know, like trying to contain the screaming, this episode, I think, is a turning point for a number of reasons. I feel like this episode, in conjunction with the last one, definitely shows a sort of shifting gears, so to speak. And I feel like this one, just with the shift in visual storytelling that we get as we're getting the most backstory I think we've gotten for this world in general. I think this is the most world building we've gotten in one episode. I am both intrigued and horrified, but also really excited for what the rest of this season has to offer. And I'm really bummed that we're going on a mid-season break. Mm-hmm.
I love Red versus Blue. I love Camp Camp. I'm still going to be screaming for this while we're waiting, not going to lie.
And yeah. Oh, go ahead.
When I just want to start talking about things. What do you guys think?
It's a long time to wait now, isn't it?
I did my waiting 12 years of it in Azkaban. Yeah.
Mark, any other initial thoughts before we kick the episode into high gear?
Well, this was the plan all along. This doesn't... I don't think that there was ever a plan to stay in this sort of territory. It's sort of like when we found out that the first three seasons of Ruby were just sort of a preface of the story that was supposed to happen. Equally, in this regard, we have a much smaller world, a much smaller group of characters, but it was all designed to make you fall in love with all of the people that are going to be involved, depending on what side they're on, because... one of my standouts in this episode was Don Paragon.
Yes.
When we first meet him, he's a ninny. He's arguably a ninny.
He's a punchline.
Yeah. He's like, oh, well, of course, it's this type of guy. And then death happens. Not even just death. Murder happens.
Yeah.
Casual murder.
It's murder on the Paragon Express here.
Which makes me think this isn't the first... Not only this isn't the first time he does it, but this is regular. This is average. You know, this is why... You know what's their name?
Danny Lyons.
The Dandelion. That's why their numbers aren't necessarily so high, but also like it's a big deal to be a dandelion because you could die at any minute, either from your expedition or from the person that's giving you the mission.
Just the moment where this guy speaks up and everybody moves away from him, I think I have to agree with you, Mark. That's a clear indication that this happens sort of frequently. before we get started breaking down the episode, we want to talk to you guys really quickly. If you want to learn and grow and have fun in all areas of your life, have we got the podcast for you.
He's a pro.
Conversations with Maria Menounos podcast edition is hosted by our AfterBuzz TV founder and drops every Friday on iTunes. Conversations with Maria Menounos features celebrity and influencer interviews along with secrets and tips on how to be better in all aspects of life, from health and wellness to career, relationships, finances, and more. Let our Maria be the big sister you've always wanted. Just go to iTunes and subscribe with Conversations with Maria Menounos for free. Be sure to rate and comment, and when you do, let Maria know that it was the Rooster Team, Rooster Teeth Reviews, the Nomad of Nowhere After Show. All of these are acceptable answers.
Set you there. All of the above.
All of the above. Conversations with Maria Menounos podcast edition. Check it out.
Support those who support us to support us.
Yep.
Help us become generals.
Hey, do you want to listen to a good podcast? Go check it out. All right, guys. Let's go ahead and break this down. The Nomad is wandering through. First of all, I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on this awesome nowhere storm that we got. Like, what a breathtaking visual to just start off sort of the beginning of the end for this portion of the season.
I mean, let's be real. If we hadn't started off with Hail to the King, we probably would have started off with Sandstorm.
Somebody asked for us to do that.
Really?
And I like the choice that we made.
Stand by it.
Yeah.
This was another really impressive display of how ferocious nature still is in this world. So, we have conversations about whether or not the land is dead, if nature is kind of fading away. This is a really impressive force. This was nature out there... ready to fight back a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I can't help but think about, like, the American Dust Bowl and all of the awful dust storms that we had when all the agriculture there started dying out and there was no plant life left to help settle the soil. That seems to be what's happened here.
Right.
And I like also in Scout's book, we hear about the lightning stuff as well. And I wonder how much the fact of that rhino being sort of an elemental... how much that played into it, where it's a type of tall tale, where Ooh. It's that, like, it's that that use of an American storytelling thing of, oh, well, it's just the lightning. The lightning will get you. You think it's just sand, but it's more than that. But it's just these rhinos that live in the desert that you gotta kill.
I love that this rhino looked like kind of a kid's action figure. Mm. Like, doesn't it look like something that would be in like a Dinobot set?
I think I had one as a kid.
And it looked like it had very, like, articulate parts.
It looks like if Rhyhorn were an electric type.
Kind of, yeah. That's actually a really good analogy. I like that. I kind of like the idea of this dust storm, as you pointed out, Stacey, nature fighting back, but maybe not necessarily just fighting back against humanity. If you think about the location of the storm and then the location of this abandoned castle, I'm wondering if maybe magic isn't sort of steering nature in a way to sort of help the nomad along. I don't know if that's like the world kind of bending to, you know, the journey that he has to take, getting to him to where he needs to be. But I kind of like the idea of it being a little bit more than just pathetic fallacy or, so yeah, I kind of like the idea of magic preventing other people from getting to where the nomad was heading. That, it's a little bit of a stretch, but I kind of like the idea. It's definitely a stretch.
Well, I mean, it could be a stretch, but also we still know so little about how magic operates, and especially how the nomad's magic operates. So, you know, if there is some kind of natural element to his magic, then maybe it's not that much of a stretch. We just don't, we still don't really know.
And we don't know if the Yadala woman was actually there or if it was all a dream. The implication that he wakes up where he initially fell asleep is that all of that was a dream and that he was having flashbacks within dreams, but it could be magic. We legit don't know.
Yeah, okay. Let's take a vote here at the table. How many people think that she was real and how many people think that she was an illusion of some sort?
Dream. Inception. Wah.
I'm leaning towards real, but I also don't trust my own opinion at this point.
It's okay. You can trust my opinion.
Well, I'm so
dangerous.
Mark?
I don't think just that she was real, but that she was a future vision of Toph.
Oh, I love that theory. If she's not a future version of Toph, I think she was real, but I think that she's definitely more than she appears to be. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If she was real, she definitely has a tie to magic in some way, shape, or form.
Well, she's a Yadala elder, and, mm-hmm. and we've been finding out more and more that the Yadala are connected with magic in some way.
And that they have unusually long lifespans.
Yeah, mm-hmm. What an interesting little tidbit just kind of casually dropped.
Oh, maybe that's why the storm was happening, to prevent, like, some sort of time paradox from happening.
Whatever you do, don't touch the baby.
Like, if Toph had made it to the castle.
Staring herself down.
Exactly. It's another form of a tall tale. By spreading information through a person like that, then it takes away the reality of, oh, no, we travel through time.
And Eddie, who is already getting on our case in chat, are you saying all Yadala look the same?
No, what I'm saying is that later in life, Toph is going to get on that hair loopy train and lose a couple of inches. That's all I'm saying.
That's what happens when you get old.
I'm just happy that we just got the correct spelling for Yadala. Because there has been Yadala. Some question about that online.
Oh, yeah. If you watch it with captions on, it has it in there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good to know.
I didn't. Was that on the YouTube captions? Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, I didn't know the RT site had captions.
I rewatched today with closed captioning on it. It had it as such.
Nice. So let's, do you guys want to talk about the El Rey sequence? Do you want to talk about it?
Let's skip it.
I guess we'll just talk about something else then. How's that relevant, right? How's your day? How's the weather?
Oh, hi, Mark.
Okay, so
the first time I've heard that.
This freaking sequence. This was something very akin. I think this is one of the most Samurai Jack-esque moments of the show, and yet it doesn't necessarily feel like Samurai Jack. This feels like kind of more akin to the Deathly Hallows sequence in Harry Potter. Just this sort of, this is a fairy tale that's being told to you in something similar to like that old shadow puppet style, or in some cases like a pop-up book. It felt very children's storybook without diluting the horror of what this story actually was.
And what I noticed upon my fourth watch... We watch when we record, I watch it again when I render, I watch it a third time for good measure, and then I watch it before the show on my fourth watch of this episode. During that sequence, we get very little direct movement. We just fade from movement to movement to movement. The only huge movement that we get in all of those sequences is the crown eating a man. That is the only full-on huge gesture that we get. We get a little bit of movement in other places, but for the most part, that's the one big one.
Yeah. Ugh. And definitely makes the action stand out quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Last week we were talking about how, you know, we cut to the silhouette, so it seems a little less gruesome. And then this week, that's absolutely what we got, and it was horrifying. A
lot of death.
A lot of death. Now, I have to ask, we've batted around a lot of theories about El Rey. How did you guys feel actually getting the full story?
I liked how it felt apart. It felt a completely different change of style. It felt medieval as opposed to Western.
Yeah.
And it makes it seem like it's so much further away from the present than it might actually be, and gives us an idea of just what the life in general was like. This lush forest is now a desert wasteland with a castle in the middle. And I presume at least the castle that the nomad is going through is the one that El Rey finds the crown in. I think that's what they were trying to convey. But it's more silence, which I'm always a fan of constructive and creative storytelling like that. Talk to you in a second. I liked that separation of time period, and also the Ice King-esque thing of the crown. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, because if he lived out, like, the one thing that I couldn't tell was if the magic was accelerating his life, or to make him age faster.
Or if it was just his normal lifespan.
Because if that's the normal lifespan and he ate all them wizards, like, how old is El Rey really? And how old is he now?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And is this crown, like, hoarding magic? Because as we see, it seems to be able to run out. Mm-hmm. So it seems to have, like, just hoarded all the magic in the world.
You go ahead. Yeah. No, go ahead. Watching through this and looking at how it's all set up, with presumably the crown taking over El Rey, with all of these with the generals in the four corners, it's Machora's mask. We have this big magical item that took over someone who may or may not have been a decent or at least okay person, and is now calling the shots, and these four beasts in the corners of the map that we have to go take out before we can earn the fierce deity mask and take out the guy himself. Like, it's just, Chad is talking about different Zelda games. Like, guys, it's Majora's Mask.
You know what it actually reminds me of? It reminds me of a story of the Ring of Power, of, like, one of the Rings of Power. It's like, hey, this king of men got a Ring of Power, and he was a good king for about 10 minutes after that, and then, this magical item corrupted him, and he became a corrupt king, and it led to the downfall of his kingdom. I feel like that's a very familiar fairy tale, fantasy-esque story, but at the same time, because of the setting of Nomad and because of how removed we are from it in time, and the fact that El Rey is still alive and being presumably puppeted by this crown that, in, I'm sure, what is no coincidence, definitely looks like the Eye of Sauron.
Yeah.
What I found really unnerving was that the crown was slowly, like, inching its way across his face as the scene went on, and it makes me wonder what he looks like now. Was that a metaphor, or was that, like, actually physically happening?
Well, that's why I went full Majora's Mask, because it's the evil magical item that you put on your head that seems to be calling the shots now.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like it latched on and has kind of expanded its power as it takes more control, is kind of what I got from it.
Definitely like a symbiote vibe a little bit, yeah. Mm. Only magic. Yeah. we're going to be able to talk to Eddie about that, and I'm sure we've got lots of questions. Do we want to say anything else about our initial thoughts on this sequence and kind of what a game changer this whole revelation is before we talk about Toth and Scout a little bit?
It's going to be a long 6 episodes. It's not, like, not just from the Nomad's point of view, but as about what we're about to talk about as well. But for four new areas, and he's walking.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to take a while. I don't think it's going to be four episodes of Generals and then two episodes of El Rey. I think we're really going to start building up the stakes to at least how devastating one general can be.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We're looking at seasons.
Speaking of... ahead.
Oh, I was just agreeing.
I was going to say, speaking of, guys, who's your favorite general? Which one was your favorite?
Alexander Anderson.
I very much appreciated the gun-wielding gunslinger. Gentleman. Yes. I
liked Fans and Knives, but yeah. Alexander Anderson.
I definitely liked the female general that was portrayed, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Fans and Knives were... yeah. I want to know more.
I dig her aesthetic.
We got some knives going on. Let's throw more knives into the mix.
It's the new look of nowhere.
Fans and knives. Fans and knives.
I'm a Greek mythology boy. I'm a good fan of an old Minotaur.
I mean,
I want to see a Texan-ass Minotaur. That's what I want to see.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I love that idea.
I'm stoked.
I mean,
like it won't happen.
All right.
We were talking at one point about how... the magic item eating magic users reminded us of something. The Umbra Staff from the Adventure Zone.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was trying to think specifically of what a magical item that absorbed other magical items reminded me of, and that is an excellent example. I'm not sure. I'm sure that wasn't necessarily the inspiration. I would be interested to hear what sort of was the inspiration for this episode and the evil crown. Okay, let's talk about Toth real quick. Oh my gosh. Again, she might be a time traveler. We don't know. She might have the power to bend space and time in the future. But we know for a fact that, oh my gosh, guys, her and Scout. This was super heartwarming, and then it ended on such a sour, sad note.
Well, it was here. It's like, oh, your heart is so bad. Let me help you up. And then I'll cut you off.
Yeah, for kids. that was an excellent reenactment of how it felt.
Me.
I love that the hashtag is now save the redheads.
Yeah.
Because this is what Rooster Teeth does.
Hey. She's still alive.
She did pull through. I'm fully expecting her to go off on her own and meet up with the Nomad and for them to have adventures.
I thought it was super sweet, though, because she's like, I'm not so good at this bravery thing. And Toth just believing in her, just seeing her eyes get really big. She does, you know, jump into danger. And I have no doubt that she definitely saved Toth's life by doing that. And it's heartbreaking that... Toth, in order to accomplish her mission, has now shut the door on her.
Yeah.
Because of Don Paragon. My heart.
Well, it also seems like the Yadala have such a huge... Like, there's more of an implication that her mission for the Yadala is much more important than anything else. Mm-hmm. So this is these are the stakes, is I really care about you, but this could mean the end of my people.
Yeah.
There's the implication that the Yadala can't survive without magic.
Mm-hmm.
Which is right. Saying something, because they've been without magic for about 100 years now.
So. Yep.
I mean, you know what we've been able to survive with for the past 6 weeks?
What's that?
The lack of answers.
I was going to say, without answers. But we've had plenty of questions.
Oh, so many questions. And we would like to thank everybody for filtering through the hashtag RTR Nomad. We've put a couple of them on a sheet here, and we're going to, once we get any on the line, we'll be able to, we're going to ask some of them. The answers may come up naturally in some other questions, but once we get Eddie on the line, we'll be able to answer those for you, or get those possibly answered.
I will say, though, guys, no direct spoiler questions, please. Yeah. I know that goes without saying, but
they're also not going to be able to answer them. We've been doing this for how long, and how many people ask questions? Oh, what's going to happen to Nora? We can't tell you that.
Are we going to see this?
Maybe?
Well, real quick, before we get started with that, I want to talk to you guys really quickly about iTunes. Folks, thank you so much to everybody who's gone to iTunes to rate, subscribe, leave a comment. We love hearing from you, and it is the best way to let our aforementioned producers know that you guys like the show that we're putting on. And guys, if you do leave a comment, you might just get a shout out on the show.
Hold on.
But you guys definitely should do that, and we love hearing from you. You're all the best, and you're all wonderful. wonderful. And even if it's just on, like, Twitter, it's been such a pleasure getting to talk to you guys about this show and about other Rooster Teeth properties. You guys are just the best.
Yeah, so leave us reviews so that we can read them online, because we don't have any new ones.
So, guys, go to iTunes, subscribe, leave a comment. You'll get a shout-out on the show. And you'll also let us know that you love us. So, yay, great.
And bring us to new people. Like, if you know someone who is watching Nomad of Nowhere, or if you know someone who is watching Red versus Blue, which is what we're going to start doing next, like, if you know someone who is enjoying these Rooster Teeth shows, throw our after show at them.
Yep. And sadly, the iTunes store is a little broken, so only the five-star button works.
I know, it's the weirdest thing.
We're working on getting that troubleshooted, but we'll get it fixed eventually.
It's not a bug, it's a feature.
Anyway, so, okay, guys, you mentioned Don Paragon.
Yeah, I did.
And how this sort of, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand.
A lot.
And just a very simple murder, and then, no, leave him. Like, how dare you provide medical attention to this man that I just stabbed. Like, okay, Ghostface, thanks.
I think the it was terrifying, one, to just the implication of everybody moving away from this guy. And then I'm sure in Don Paragon's mind, that was strike one. And then the guy piped up again, and instead of going strike two, he just went to, nope, you're out, done.
Mm-hmm. There is no strike two.
No. That's not how this works.
You get one.
I feel like even if this does kind of happen on a regular basis, I kind of feel like he absolutely did it to make a point to Toth. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, people die. Sometimes that's for the best.
Sometimes people live and then they stop.
Forever.
But there was also the fact that he referred to Toth as an it. Do you know what I do when one of my possessions starts failing me in the middle of something important? It's like, excuse you, she is a people? She is a human?
She's a human who risked her life to save Toth.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm not trying to tell any tales out of school or anything, but what if she's created in a lab? What if she is something designed specifically for a purpose and she's malfunctioning?
You think that Scout's a robot?
What?
Or an artificial human of some sort?
I don't know. We're magic. Anything is possible.
No, she really gets over.
Now, actually, you bring up a good point. Guys, time and space. Mark, you bring up an excellent freaking point about this Yadala Elder might have been Toth, because if you go back to the first episode, guys, there was that moment where the Nomad was looking at that house and he saw a vision of Scout coming out of the house. Guys, time travel. Guys.
Some magic and time travel?
Hashtag, not a bit.
Time travel magic! No joke. Okay. I mean,
so this world has been going in cycles of about 100, 150 years, and we're reaching the end of the cycle, and the reason that everything is dying out and becoming a desert is because all the magic is gone from the world, and therefore the time travel magic that loops us back around and helps keep this cycle of life going isn't there. I figured it out.
I think Katie Kelly cracked the
code. Someone go get the time stone from Thanos.
All it takes is an Infinity Stone to fix this.
There's just been Infinity Stone jokes in the chat from the beginning.
No, I was just thinking, like, what would
the
happen.
The Soul Stone is in the castle.
I was just thinking of what crown. Would happen if the crown got a hold of an Infinity Stone. And it made me very, very sad.
The Soul Stone is the crown.
I mean, yeah, it kind of ate a lot
it
of people.
It needs souls.
Well, yeah. Got plenty
okay, of them. I need to backpedal here because we're going to start wandering into spoiler territory for something we're not recapping.
Really surprised you didn't make a soul power joke. Because it eats people. Never mind. I'm just really surprised you didn't make a soul power joke.
I don't know what you're referencing.
Never mind. It's fine. So,
after, really quickly, y'all keep talking. I'm gonna help Steve out in the booth so that we can get this taken care of.
Okay, great.
Imagine that we've thrown up the technical difficulties image and that we're kind of doing the little music here. And
yeah. Sorry, things folks, are happening. We are having some technical difficulties. We are having some technical difficulties for sure. So now that Mark's gone, let's talk shipping.
I mean, we all ship Scoth. Duh.
Is that the official ship name?
I think so.
Yay!
That's the only one I've seen.
I like it.
I like it.
I like it.
I'm on board with that.
Although, in the chat, guys, go ahead and pitch us your other ship names.
Spam is the most creative with ship names. So.
Can I just say...
Well, I missed the shipping episode, so I'm making up for it.
This episode broke my heart. Like,
I mean, yeah.
I like just that moment where she's like, if I think you can do it. And just Scout's eyes get all big and shiny.
I saw that as super manipulative, not gonna lie.
Okay, so that was my first reading of it too. I've been on the fence about Toth for a couple episodes, just as far as where her priorities are and how driven she has been. So we've had these little moments where like it's clear she does care about Scout. But when push comes to shove, if she needs Scout to do something, will she use that to manipulate her? And I think later in the episode she proved that that was not necessarily the case at all. But that initial moment, I saw the manipulative. I was like, oh, she'd say anything to get her to go.
It did take Scout to figure out the electric rhino.
I love that you guys immediately jumped to, she's manipulating you, Scout, get out, this is an unhealthy relationship.
I didn't go that far, I just said it was manipulative.
No, I'm glad that you saw it, because I took it at face value. I'm like, oh, look at that, she believes in her.
I wanted to take it that way.
Pepsi fan in chat says, Red Manuel X himself, that's amore.
The truest form.
I mean... I believe we call that narcissism.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful. Talking about Red Manuel, I love that, like, right after this murder, there's still that fun little musical cue as he, like, pushes himself into frame.
And then her shoulder-checking him. You hear the trumpet go,
You will not be deterred by a murder. I mean, come on.
Red Manuel has committed many murders.
You came back at the wrong time.
You came back at the right time.
You absolutely did.
Hi, everybody.
So, Eddie, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am on the line. I heard Red Manuel talk, so that makes me happy.
Ladies and gentlemen, writer of Nomad of Nowhere, Eddie Rivas. Welcome, Eddie.
Hello.
Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Yeah, when you guys first mentioned me calling in, I think it was around episode 3 or 4, mm-hmm. I feel like maybe now you see why I was like, let's wait approximately 2 to 3 weeks.
So how does it feel, like, now that everybody's gotten a chance to see this episode, how does it feel, like, watching the fan reactions?
Oh, it's been super cool, because we always had, like, the big idea with the show was to tell, in a lot of ways it's a very different show than anything that we've done at Rooster Teeth before, try to take things at a more measured pace, a lot less dialogue. And so we kind of knew that we had this moment halfway through the season that we were very excited about. So it's been really awesome to watch people see all this stuff get teased out and then finally get the important context for kind of, you know, what the stakes are and what's going on with everybody. So that was very exciting. We were like on pins and needles waiting for it.
What went into the decision to make the Nomad a silent protagonist?
So the whole concept was created by, Jordan Whitman, and, I know a big inspiration for the show was, kind of Samurai Jack and leaning more into kind of a quieter, bit of storytelling. So I wasn't around for a whole lot of that, creation process. He's actually had this, concept for a while. I want to say he tweeted it out this week. There was, kind of one of the original, animations that this whole thing was based on. There's a lot of similarities to what we see in episode 6 with some of the origin story of El Rey. You should definitely look that up. It's actually really cool to go back and look at.
It is at Jordan_Whitman. Jordan is GEORDEN_WHITMAN. Yeah, a lot of the Nomad art that he tweets out is really really flippin' adorable. But on top of the silence of the nomad, how do you write for the nomad? Are there specific notes of what they're trying to convey, or is it something that you let the animators explore?
That's funny. It's actually like been kind of one of the trickier things to balance, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a tightrope walk because you want to give the animators freedom to kind of interpret and have some fun with it. But at the same time, if it's not super clear, it's almost like a game of telephone, right? Where they're kind of interpreting what the intentions are and then the audience is going to have to interpret. So sometimes we literally write in, like in quotations, like this is what the nomad is saying right now. Mm. It almost appears as like a bit of dialogue. And then we also try to be very clear about kind of what he's doing with his body. And then the animators will usually kind of take that and take it like an extra mile. I think a really good example of kind of where that worked really well was in episode 5 when there was the music box and it was worried about Clarence watching watching it get the key. But that whole silent exchange was like written like with like little quotes, like with the nomad looking at him like, seriously, dude, like like that kind of look.
I'd love to take a look at a script to see some of that.
Absolutely. That's such a precious note.
In the same way that you want to see the script for every Star Wars movie to see what the droids are actually saying.
Yeah.
I want the script.
Yeah, no, it's definitely been a challenge to have a silent protagonist that is kind of moving a lot of the show forward. That's for sure. It was one of the things that made the project really unique and got a lot of people kind of really excited about it. And it puts a lot of emphasis on the animators, and I know that they have been running wild with it.
Now, you've written for a number of other Rooster Teeth shows and properties. I was wondering, how was it exactly that you started getting involved with Nomad?
I did stuff with Red vs. Blue years and years ago, like season 10. I helped with X-Ray and Vav. Kind of been here and there in a bunch of different productions, and we've always talked about kind of me coming on board to like help do a lot more writing, kind of like the entire process of a full season for something. And once they started kind of moving with Nomad, when it kind of got greenlit and started moving forward, it kind of became apparent that Miles and Jordan, who were going to be working on it, Jordan Swears, that they were going to need someone else to kind of come in and help take the reins on that just a little bit. And so we've always kind of wanted to work together. And so they sent me the pitch, which just had a description of the characters and what some of the inspirations were, a very loose outline of kind of the first season, and then an outline for episode 4, which was sort of like the, you know, just here's kind of what the format of the show would look like. And I absolutely fell in love with it. I felt like I got it, and I was really excited about it.
That's metal.
Yeah. Well, you bring up episode 4, and we've discussed on this panel before that was originally the pilot. What went into the decision to change the pilot from what we got in episode 4?
Yeah, so I think the word pilot is kind of more in the sense of like this was the prototype, I think is probably a better way of saying it, that it was here's kind of what a typical episode of this show would look like, rather than it being like, here's the one that's going to kick everything off. More of like, this is what you could just pluck this episode out and here's what it could be week to week. You've got wacky adventures. You've got, Scout and Toph like chasing after the nomad. You've got the nomad, finding himself in some kind of crazy trouble with some weird bounty hunter pursuing, more of a prototype than a pilot, I'd say. Mm.
So, sort of like a like way, way back in the 90s, the What a Cartoon Show or the like, Oh Yeah, yeah cartoons from Nickelodeon.
90s? That was like early 2000s.
No, that was
early
2000s.
That was late 90s.
But way back?
Yeah, more of a proof of concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, here's what a typical episode will look like.
Yeah.
Yep, makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Hey, hi everybody else on the table. What's good?
I know. I'm just fascinated by all of this.
Well, then I guess we should go to one of our questions from Twitter. At the real Figbert, I presume their name is Figbert, asks, why didn't the nomad try to learn more about the power from the book?
Yeah, that was... Okay, so I feel like giving the nomad a spell book is like handing a little kid like a physics textbook, right? You know what I mean? Like he's so childlike, and there's not much of an understanding of kind of what he does and how it all works. I mean, we've seen that several times already. But then there was also kind of the inherent like danger of like this guy wanted to do some really like crazy stuff with this. Mm-hmm. So there was definitely like a let me leave this thing here. But you know, who knows? Maybe who knows what will happen with that?
it makes sense after this guy tried to murder him that you don't want to leave him with this spell book because, hey, what happens if he actually figures things out? Let's just not.
Yep.
So that I completely understand.
I feel like the episode 5 and 6, you know, with the abrupt shifts in tone, from the way that you guys have been talking, it sounds like that was always sort of the intention going into the show, that it was less cotton candy circus fair and more of like there's a very dark undercurrent of this world.
Less carnival, more carnies.
Or carnage.
Yeah, depends on the day.
Yeah. Was there anything that you wanted to include in this first part of the season that, for some reason or another, you weren't able to? Anything that got left on the cutting room floor?
That one's a tricky one to answer without getting into spoiler territory.
Understood.
I will say that there was, like in very, very, very early drafts of episode 1, there was a flashback that maybe will be a future episode. Who knows? Actually, I know. I'm being coy, but yes.
Well, yes. I mean, you never know when an idea that was on the drawing board could better be incorporated later on down the road. So we don't mind at all.
It's the sequel to that cottage flashback.
For sure.
So there's definitely a lot of stuff that we're sitting on. Sure.
So we've been talking about episode 6 tonight, and there was this fantastic sequence fully developing the world and El Rey and and it did so in a very wonderful visual style. Could you speak a little bit on sort of the inspiration for this sequence?
So it was funny, earlier you guys mentioned Deathly Hallows. That was absolutely something that we talked about. When we were kind of writing and like plotting that episode out, episode 6 was so, like I talked about how in the original pitch for the show, there was kind of a loose outline of the series. You know, a lot of times it would be like this episode, these are some of the general, and episode 6 was like one of the like definitive, like this is when we get this information. And it's a big deal. And when we were writing it, Deathly Hallows was definitely something that we talked about a lot, just being able to like silently give all this backstory in a way that was trying to be clear and concise without a whole lot of room for interpretation. Some things open to interpretation, but just to be as clear as possible with it and kind of give it that storybook feel. Yeah, Deathly Hallows was like one of the top things that we were thinking about. And just kind of Samurai Jack in general. Samurai Jack was always kind of a thing that we went back to trying to say more with less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw one of the comments on YouTube for this episode, and it said, this is the point where we go from Samurai Jack on Cartoon Network to Samurai Jack on Adult Swim.
I saw that comment too, yeah.
Yep. I kind of have to agree, for sure.
What Western influences did you use? Because I keep running smack into my Trigun feelings, and I'm wondering, like, what other Western influences went into this show?
Yeah, Trigun is absolutely one of those influences. We listened.
Validated.
Kate. I have been validated.
I mean, really, it's pretty obvious, I feel like. But it was definitely an influence. And then Red Dead Redemption is something. We actually listened to a lot of the Red Dead Redemption soundtrack while we were working on the show. Just as kind of like a mood setting music and stuff. True Grit, you know, was kind of thrown around when talking about the show kind of early on, just mainly in the idea that like the show is kind of cutesy and stuff when it starts off. But the idea that like, no, like this world like really has teeth. which, you know, we've started to see now, and really being able to kind of lean into those moments once the show started to bite a little bit.
Yeah, teeth and things that will definitely eat you.
Yes.
The talking about the sort of Western influences, I do wonder, looking at, because something that we've talked about a little bit with Sam Ireland is that there aren't necessarily a lot of like great Westerns in terms of like female characters, mm-hmm. and things like that. But in this series, we get the dynamic duo of Toth and Scout. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit on that dynamic, because I found their interactions both endearing and heart-wrenching.
Yeah, for sure. That they were kind of two of the big, like when I first kind of read about kind of what the show was going to be, like the nomad and like his journey is like super cool to look at. But then like kind of the play of Toth and Scout, you know, just with, you've got the young, enthusiastic, like stars in her eyes, like pining after, you know, this kind of superhero figure, you know, was something that kind of translated like really well. And like, I feel like we've seen in a lot of ways, but it was really cool to kind of put it in this dynamic where it was, two women, and that they're the ones kind of, really leading the chase and really driving a lot of the story. Which there's so many more things I wish I could say about where that's going.
We'll talk to you again at the end of the season.
Yes.
Speaking of, given what we have seen in these first six episodes, what's been your favorite thing in the show that we've seen so far?
That we've seen so far? Probably Toth running to Scout's side in episode six, after she gets injured. And then the moment, the brief moment at the cabin in episode one, the unexplained moment is all I'll call it right now.
call whatever you want. You write the damn thing.
those two have been my favorite, and watching people react to those. I'm like obsessed with reaction videos. So like every reaction video, watching people react to like Toth running the Scout side and seeing how injured she actually is. I get a little misty like every single time I watch it.
So you just need a compilation then.
Yeah.
Following up on that a bit, we have a question from Caitlin Geddes in the hashtag. I'd like to know what part was the hardest part to write of the six episodes we've seen.
Honestly, the first episode was really difficult, just in the sense that like we have so many, like doing the web format, kind of the way we do it with kind of like 12 minute ish episodes, there's only so much you can do in 12 minutes. And, you know, you've got story to introduce and characters to introduce and, you know, status quo, and then break the status quo and inciting incident. There's like all these things that need to happen. But also like, it just needs to have, like the tone of the show. We wanted to be like there. And so just we spent a lot of time on that first episode, really trying to make sure that all those things made sense. And really just that the thing that we care the most about was like, here are your three main people and here's what they want. And we'll get to motivations and all that stuff later. But like, here's who they are and what they care about. And hopefully people buy in. And that was probably one of the harder ones to write. And then episodes two and three, because they were kind of one story that we were kind of breaking out, and it was the first thing that we were doing right after the nomads out of this briar patch and into the whole world. You know, what information do we give and how do we kind of establish the format of the series? Those were hard too. So I guess I just named half of the episodes.
What the hardest to write. What was difficult to write? All of it.
Everything. Episodes one through three.
So not to ask you how long we're going to have to wait, but as sort of a thing to keep people enticed and ready for however many more episodes we have left, is there anything that you would like to say about the future of Nomad of Nowhere?
In what way?
I mean,
however you'd like.
We're not asking for spoilers. We're not asking for anything. You know, it just a thing of we don't know how long we're going to wait. I think a lot of people are going to be waiting with bated breath, especially with how episode 6 ended up being. But is there anything that you want to say to the fans about the next stage of Nomad of Nowhere?
What I will say is that what we've announced, I think, fingers crossed before I open my mouth, later this summer, it'll be back. Mm-hmm. You know, I won't say exactly when, but just in terms of other things about the second half of the season, the way we've kind of viewed Nomad of Nowhere is that the first 6 episodes were kind of like, if you're on a roller coaster and those first few episodes are like the roller coaster is creeping up to the top of the hill. Episode 5 is where you look around and you're like, oh God, I'm like way higher than I thought I was. And then episode 6 is the moment where the drop happens. And the way the rest of the season is paced is just a roller coaster. And so like episode 6 starts the drop and it's just a ride from here on out. So that we're very excited about the back half of the season. It's a lot more ambitious than the first half. It moves at a pretty nutty clip compared to the first half. We wanted to take time to set up the world and tease out. We only wanted to give whatever information you absolutely needed to understand what was going to happen next. And now that you've got the context, it's just going to kind of run wild. So that's what I will say about where the show is going in the near future.
That's
Why are we going on break?
The fact that season 2 is going to be, we think this is going to be the ambitious part. The first half of the season is remarkable. You rarely get silence in modern cartoons because you're trying to get, hey, kid, we need your attention. Buy our toys.
Yeah.
So all of the chances that you, the writing staff, the animation staff, the entire staff over at RT Animation have taken, the fact that we're going up, it blows my mind.
Basically, you've made it impossible for us to wait. So,
I think Malachroma sums it up best. Well, I'm terrified and delighted.
Yep, we're very much looking forward to it. Sadly, we are running short on time. Eddie, where can people go if they want to keep up with you?
I am on Twitter at Eddie Rivas. That's Eddie with a Y.
Do you have any other projects at Rooster Teeth that you can tell us about? We don't want to get you into trouble with NDAs.
I am writing for season 3 of Camp Camp.
Yeah.
Yes! I am contributing to that, which starts later this month. I'm a bad camper because I don't know the date off the top of my head.
May 23rd.
We're ready. Well, Eddie, thank you so, so much again for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I love watching this every single week. I'm obsessed with it. It's awesome.
Well, thank you for watching.
You are welcome back anytime.
Yeah, I appreciate your side tweets and DMs of as we move forward in the season. Thanks again, Eddie.
All right, thank you guys.
Have a wonderful night.
Have a great night.
All right.
And now we've got a turbo wrap.
We're out of time. Katie Cullen, where can people go if they want to find you?
Hi, all my buddies. You can follow me all over the social medias as well as on YouTube and Twitch at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. Stay tuned for next week because we are swinging right into Red versus Blue. And if you are looking for the reactions for these episodes, they live on that YouTube channel.
Hey guys, I'm Stacey Shuttles. You can find me all over the web at Stacey Shuttles or over on Twitch at Inventory Full PT, where I do a weekly gaming show and stream throughout the week.
Yeah, you just streamed Far Cry 5.
I did.
A couple of things. You need to go over to our YouTube channel, ABTV Rooster Team. We just put out a new episode of Welcome to Vale.
Yes!
Episode 2. It's called Human Grim Relations. A lot of crazy shit happens in it. You should probably check it out. Also, we are going to be doing a little bit of a contest. We haven't figured out the prize yet, but in the interim between part 1 and part 2 of the season of Nomad of Nowhere, we want to see you make a minion. Be as creative as you want, the coolest minion that you can make, whether it's through photography or through arts and crafts or costuming or whatever.
Digital arts.
Or whatever. We want to see your minion.
Your little googly-eyed happiness.
And we're gonna recap. I'm going to go into a little bit more detail on the ABTV Rooster Team YouTube page. There's also a fun thing that I'm going to put on there in a little bit. But that's where Welcome to Vale lives. tpublic.com/TheRoosterTeam. We just put up a new shirt today. But help us do all this weird off-channel stuff by going there and picking up a fine piece of merchandise. And I'm on Twitter at Mark B. Donica.
And you can follow the whole team at ABTV Rooster Team on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me at The Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. Just follow me on Twitter. I do a bunch of things. Thank you guys so much for watching. We will see you all next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.